Today, giving credit where credit is due, the DFA Daily to the 30th of September 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, it's the end of the month yet again, and so we've had more data from both APRA and from the Reserve Bank. And so I wanted to just go through the financial aggregates first, which is the data published by the Reserve Bank, and then we'll look at the APRA data as well. And the news actually is not particularly strong, although I noticed a couple of analysts were celebrating the massive growth in credit for housing. Well, I'm not sure I'm seeing it. According to the RBA, the housing credit grew by 0.2% between July and August, and the year ended from August 2019 to 2020 was up 3.2% compared with 3.1% back a year ago. Hardly very stellar. It's also worth noting that business credit is also much weaker at 2.9% annualised, and total credit growth didn't change at all in August and is at 2.2% relative to 2.8% a year ago. So I don't understand where all these analysts are saying there's a massive boom in credit. I don't see it. Here is the monthly change data. And you can see there that housing credit is bumping along the bottom. And within that, owner-occupied credit grew 0.4%. Property investing was flat in the month. Personal credit fell 1.1%. And business credit fell 0.4%. Now, the monthly data, of course, is quite volatile, but nevertheless, and in fact, not a lot here, other than suggest there's quite a lot of weakness in the credit at the moment. And again, I have to say, I don't understand where all these analysts are seeing all this credit growth. It's just not there. Now, we can also look at the broader measure of credit, which actually was, as I say, flat over the month. And the broad money measure was up 0.8%. You can see that very big peak earlier in the year. Well, that was to do with all the stimulus, of course, and that's now coming away. So broad money, 0.8%. Now, the annualized picture, which is probably a more realistic view of what's going on, tells a rather similar story, actually. Here is housing credit growth from 2016 onwards. And you can see that back in 2016, we were at 7.5%, and now we're at just around 3% and a bit. So there's really hardly any movement up there. Within that, owner-occupied lending was just very, very slightly stronger at 5.4% annualised, whereas investing was down 0.6% annualised and is still languishing. You can also see there that personal credit dropped 12.5% annualised, and that continues to tell a very important story about the fact that many people are repaying debt rather than taking debt. Although, as we'll see shortly, there's another story there as well. And here is business credit continuing to degrade at 2.9%. This is majorly concerning insofar that business credit is going to be required to create more growth in the future. And the fact that businesses are not interested in borrowing or not able to borrow tells us something rather important about the trajectory of the economy ahead. Now, let's look at the percentage change in total credit. And there you can see that over the last year, it's now at 2.2%. That's pretty much as low as it's ever been. Whereas broad money is extremely high. So you can read that by suggesting that the Reserve Bank and all their initiatives are throwing money into the system. And that includes, of course, the superannuation withdrawals. But it isn't necessarily creating much benefit. And that's one of the reasons why I think that the economic activity will be weaker ahead. Now, as well as the Reserve Bank data, we of course also get the APRA data, which relates to the banks themselves. And this is the monthly credit status. Each, of course, is reporting gross loans. Now, that of course includes loans that were new loans and also loans repaid. So it's a net position. And of course, it's based on the reporting that the banks pass through to APRA. And we know that sometimes there are some errors in the way that that information is shared. But nevertheless, the trends are pretty interesting. So we can start by looking at the selected portfolios. So this is the portfolio movements from July to August. And you can see there that ANZ and CBA both grew their portfolios, you know, reasonably well. And a lot of the activity was for owner occupation, the blue, but ANZ has been writing quite a lot of investment loans. We knew that from other data points as well. We also saw that CBA has been writing investment loans. Macquarie has been at it too, and Bendigo and Adelaide, although the total value, of course, is lower. And then we see some of the other players like the Bank of Queensland, the HSBC, and Rabobank. But this is interesting. We're starting to see some banks paying down their loan portfolios, particularly investment. ING's, for example, is down. Citigroup's down. AMP's is down. Members' equity is down. Suncorp is also down. Bank of Sydney's down. And looking at NAB, they wrote a few more loans for owner occupation, but their investment portfolio dropped considerably. But Westpac takes the biscuit insofar that both owner occupied loans and investment loans dropped considerably. If we roll that up and look at the total ADI stock, we can see that loans for owner occupation did grow just a little, and that continues to be another record. The investment loans, not so much. And the share of investment loans continues to fall. It's now close to 36%. So all the action is really about owner occupation. And another way to look at that is to look at the ADI changes per month. And you can see that owner-occupied loans amongst the ADIs rose by 0.37% in the month, which is a bit higher than last month. You can see there that investment loans were still negative, but just slightly negative, 0.03%. And so total credit grew 0.23% amongst the ADIs in the last month. Now, I have to tell you, that doesn't look to me to be a massive growth in terms of credit, despite the analysts saying that it looks like that. I don't know where they're seeing the data. I just don't see it that way at all. Now, there was some other interesting information that came out today, and it's very relevant to this question of credit. So the Daily Mail reported that around 2 million Australians have maxed out on their credit cards. And this is according to a research report from Finder. And interestingly, they said that young people were more likely to be overdrawn on their credit cards, with 26% of millennials aged between 18 and 38 exceeding their limits. And women were more likely to struggle with debt, with 18% of them spending on plastic beyond the limit, compared with 13% of men. And among Australians in all age groups and across both genders, 2 million people have been in financial dire straits since March, most likely owing more than $10,000 on their credit card. Now, what's interesting about this is that according to the Reserve Bank, the average credit limit on a credit card is $9,892. And of course, if you are over your credit card limit, you risk taking a hit on your credit score. Now, just one other observation. NAB and CBA are both launching different credit cards to look more like buy now, pay later cards, where you pay a fee and essentially they're trying to offer even more credit. And remember what I said earlier on, the total pool of personal credit is falling. So this suggests that there is going to be a higher concentration of credit cards and buy now, pay later loans, as well as perhaps payday loans, amongst those in financial stress. And in fact, I see that in my stress data, particularly mortgage stress, where there's a high correlation between people in mortgage stress and excess personal credit. And recall, of course, that the suggestion is now that the responsible lending provisions will be dialed back and all the assets will be put back on borrowers. Not a good time to be doing that, in my view. Another piece of information that came out today was from the ABS, talking about dwelling approvals. In fact, approvals fell 1.6% in August in season-adjusted terms. They've actually stopped doing trend data on the principle that Nobody knows what the trend looks like these days. The fall was driven by private sector dwellings, excluding houses, in other words, units, which decreased by 11%. And that's a significant fall in the number of apartments approved in August, which sort of offset a bit of a rise in July. And this statistical series is often quite volatile. Private sector houses did rise 4.8% in August, particularly driven by Western Australia and Queensland. And guess what? That's to do with home builder and home and land packages. But nevertheless, the momentum is still pretty weak. You can see there that even houses are lower than where they were back in August 17. So I have to say, I'm not totally convinced that there is real strong momentum here, although, of course, home builder has had a bit of an impact, has persuaded some people to go and buy, although, as we've said on several occasions, it's more a bribe than anything else, and it's there to help the construction sector. And I wouldn't be surprised to see more initiatives in the budget for this next week. And there was one other really interesting piece of information that came out from UBS today. As you may know, that they do surveys looking at what's called liar loans. In other words, to what extent have people lied when making a loan application? And they continue to see considerable proportions of loans being written with factually incorrect data. In other words, people are telling porkies. Now, just recall, there is this drive to remove responsible lending provisions and put all the acid back on individuals. And yet we know that individuals, according to UBS, sometimes don't tell the complete truth. And UBS concluded in their analysis that those who'd actually been deceptive in their loan applications were exhibiting much higher levels of mortgage stress. And potentially there's a scenario where borrowers are more likely to be under more stress than the banks perceive. And in fact, they concluded, and this is quite critical, many of these customers should be, they say, considered delinquent in our view, given this stress, a recovery in employment and house prices is critical to the bank's performance. And I think that's the point, because essentially we know that there are a number of households showing up in our mortgage stress surveys that are in difficulty, and liar loans is still an important part of the story. Once again, I have to say, this is not the time to be dialing back responsible lending provisions, in my view. And of course, we've still got APRA, who basically are allowing banks to report bad loans as not bad loans. That could come unglued during the course of next year. But this is an area that we need to watch very closely, because the chances are we're going to see more households getting into difficulty. And more importantly, perhaps, we're also going to see structural issues and maybe even financial stability issues within the banking system. And it's worth recalling that the Bank of Queensland upped their provisions yesterday to take account of the fact that they think they're going to have a larger portfolio of bad loans into the future. I think there are other banks that could also be following a similar path. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.